Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, hosted by Pat Iyer and your co-host, me, Kelly Campbell. Today's topic and guest is Libby Gill. The topic is the hope-driven leader, the science of hopefulness, derived from the medical and positive psychology communities. Today, I think it's a good fit for the podcast audience in terms of how quickly healthcare is changing, and especially since nurses are on the front line of the future. Our guest, Libby Gill, has an impressive bio. She is the former head of communications and public relations for Sony Universal and Turner Broadcasting. She was the branding brain behind the launch of the Dr. Phil Show. Oh, I can't wait to pick your brain on this. I'm a fan. She is now the CEO of LA-based Libby Gill and Company, an executive coaching and consulting firm. She guides emerging and established leaders at organizations including Abbott Medical, Capital One, Disney, Edwards Lifesciences, Medtronic, Silverado Senior Care, and a variety of other big companies. She's the author of four books, including the award-winning You Unstuck, and the most recent, The Hope-Driven Leader, Harness the Power of Positivity. And this conversation couldn't come at a better time for me, and I'm sure a large group of this audience. Welcome, Libby. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Kelly. Happy to be here.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, Dr. Phil. Wow. What an experience, huh?
It was. I was actually the very first person ever hired, and I was a consultant to the show and helped when he was still at Oprah, helped to create the brand, or I shouldn't say create, because of course he already had one, but to bring his show to the public. And it was a really fun enterprise, and obviously it's still going strong today.
Yes. So branding is essential.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what inspired you to write your book, You Unstuck, Mastering the New Rules of Risk-Taking?
Well, I grew up in a fairly troubled family, and in a lot of ways, I really had to raise myself. And I remember as a teen reading self-help and psychology and religious books, and I would hide them so no one in the family made fun of me, because we weren't that kind of family. But the message was persevere, keep going, things will get better. And I really took that to heart and later wrote a book called Traveling Hopefully about letting go of family baggage and stories of the past. And that's when hope really became kind of my mantra. It was sort of, I consider that the jet fuel for work and life. Really that sense of things will get better. If you have a vision of the future and you keep moving towards it, it may take a while, but you will eventually get there. And then I discovered a real body of research, as you said, from positive psychology in the medical communities. And I, as a coach, then began to apply those to the workforce, where both as a corporate leader and now as an executive coach, I found hope to be in pretty short supply at times with the workforce, and thought I would really make that part of my work to bring that into different cultures and help leaders instill that into their organizations.
Yes, the part of being stagnant and hope, that there's a fine line of being hopeful in the beginning and then getting stagnant or worried and being the risk taker.
Absolutely. I mean, that always happens. Everybody hits those points, even the hard chargers of the world, and certainly you have those in healthcare, have those points of, where am I going next? You know, what am I doing? Or some people who are a little bit more junior on the scene may feel like, well, how do I connect to this? You know, I get the corporate vision and with a capital V, but what does that mean to me? How am I contributing? And it's really up to the leaders to connect the dots for them, to show people, here's the vision of the future. Here's what it means to you, because not everybody has that sense of, wow, I'm contributing on this massive scale. But it's really important to see where you are in that process and how you fit into the purpose of the organization. And that's what HOPE does. It really, it's about having a future-focused vision and knowing what the actions are to move towards that. But as you said, anticipating, it's not always going to be great. It's not always going to be easy. If you set the bar high enough, you know you're going to have setbacks along the way.
Right. Right. And that's still maintaining the hope through the setbacks or the overwhelmingness. So have you ever been stuck in your personal or professional?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I worked in the television world at those Hollywood studios, and I did that for, gosh, about 18 years. I mean, it was a long time, and I really loved it, particularly developing my own team, which was the part that really spoke to me, helping people chart their own career path and their own growth. And that was exciting. And also the strategy of working with the media and seeing everything that you say in print, which most days was a good thing. Not every day. Some days you wake up with a knot in your stomach. But there's still those times of, oh, what's next? I've done this. And there was a point in my corporate life that I thought, you know, I need to do something that speaks to me more on a, I don't mean this to sound corny, but more on a soul level. I need to do something that feels deeply personal. And that's when I started, and lucky for me, coaching was then a new field that was coming to the forefront. And I think people found it a little silly then. It was life coaching and people like to take shots at it, but it developed and grew the practice of coaching. And now it's, you know, there aren't a lot of companies that don't use either internal or external coaches. So that was part of my own growth, saying, what's next? Am I going to, you know, jump off this this ledge here and hope that there's a net down there? And that's what I decided to do. And I encourage others to do that.
Well, I don't think that sounds corny. I think that sounds inspirational.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, when I think of legal nurse consultants and life care planners, yes, it's a business. But if you don't lose perspective of the patient versus the client, that can be at the soul level also.
Well, nowhere more than I think the nursing and broader healthcare profession. I mean, you are nurses and then legal nurses as a subset of that, but you touch lives at the deepest level. I mean, you're dealing with people when it is truly a matter of life and death. And we used to joke in the entertainment industry, you know, it was always like, oh, it's not life or death. Nobody's going to lose a kidney, you know, through the ha, ha, ha. We thought we were so funny. But in your world, lives are at stake, lives and the quality of people's lives. And I've got I've got two sons who I'm very proud of, and one of them has a chronic illness, and I've spent more time than I care to remember in hospitals. Unfortunately, he's stable and he's fine now with the care that he has. But nurses, as much as I dealt with doctors and, you know, the administration of a hospital staff, it was the nurses that fed that sense of hope. They were the ones that took care of him. And oh, I'm tearing up. It was such a profound experience.
Yes. Oh, well, my prayers for you and your family
thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
But everybody's got something, whether it's financial issues or health issues, or, you know, we've got aging parents and young kids and just the stresses of the workplace. So having, and nurses, of course, share all that. I mean, the time we live in, this is arguably, with the changes that you see in the workplace and also in our personal lives, this may be the slowest period of change that we'll ever experience again. I mean, think about that. As fast as our world is moving, we may never slow down. So that's a lot to sort of grapple with. And when people think about how do I deal with this sort of swirling change and also the sadnesses of our world, the political divide and the mass shootings, homelessness. I mean, you look at all of that and it can seem so overwhelming. You know, how do I make a difference and what can I do? And it can sort of make an individual feel like they can't participate or contribute, but in fact they can. And of course we've got this 24/7 news cycle and social media that just exacerbates both the good, but also all the troubles that we have. And I think your population, nurses, nurse caregivers, are the people that sort of, they keep us centered, they keep us on track, they provide not only the physical care, but that hope that we will get better. And in the world of hope theory, which is the science of hope, it's the fundamental core is that change is possible. And when you think about that, you may think, well, yeah, duh, don't we all believe change is possible? But, you know, if you think about your own life, there is always somebody there who's the it is what it is, you can't fight City Hall person that actually doesn't believe change is possible. So in order to feed hope into your culture, into yourself, into your immediate team or even family, you've got to have a sense that change is possible and an expectation that your actions really drive the outcome. So it's what you do. You can't depend on, you know, the administration, your boss, your spouse. It's what you do that makes the difference. And in hope theory, that's called true hope, recognizing the setbacks and moving forward anyway versus false hope, which is a sense of either, oh, anything I do doesn't really matter, or everything's going to be fine no matter what I do. And both of those are the sense of, you know, that's not a sense of grounded in reality. But true hope says, okay, here's the reality of the situation. I see it, whether it's a diagnosis or a layoff or money lost or whatever it is, and I can deal with it. And I can see the future ahead of me, and I'm going to keep going towards it. And that's the essence of true hope.
This is Pat Iyer. Before we continue with the show, I want to focus on a resource I have that will give you answers for your questions on motivation, hope, mindset, and productivity. How to Grow Your LNC Business, Secrets of Success is one of my newest books. Your mindset matters. The beginning of the book probes how your attitude affects your legal nurse consulting success and how you can make it your friend. One of the best ways to demonstrate your expertise is to ace a presentation to attorneys at a conference or at their law firm. 4 chapters in this book go into depth on techniques to master public speaking. You'll be inspired by the stories of how 5 experienced legal nurse consultants started and grew their business. I divided the book into 3 sections. Section 1 asks the provocative question, are you your friend or enemy? Mindset matters for your LNC success. Get inspired by the techniques for tackling adversity. Section 2 helps you take advantage of one of the best ways to grow your business, to teach attorneys. Making presentations to attorneys is an excellent way to demonstrate your expertise and prove your value. 4 powerful chapters give you the specifics on preparing for and delivering a polished professional presentation. Section 3 has pure inspiration. 5 experienced legal nurse consultants in this section share their stories about how they got started and grew their businesses. They reveal their triumphs and challenges. Get your copy at http://lnc.tips/creating-series. That URL again is http://lnc.tips/creating-series. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on the book. Put that code in the promo code box when you check out.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I picked up on, because I'm personalizing all of your advice, is I heard the word overwhelmed. And in my business, I tend to get overwhelmed because I'm busy, which is a fabulous thing. It's great. Yeah. But so why is it that I get overwhelmed and then I get so excited about my goals and my plans, and then you can just drop off over time because I'm so overwhelmed. Can I do it? Can I really do this?
Right.
Because I'm getting so busy and is this really going to happen?
Right, right. Oh, that's a lot right there, Kelly. And I think you're so right that we experience that whole range of emotions, you know, on a day or in an hour. You can feel like this great desire to make change, and then how am I ever going to get there? And then I've got all this daily stuff I have to deal with. And for me, it's really about clarifying what's most important. Set a vision for yourself, and the way to get your head around it, I think, you know, organizations have to think in 5 and 10 and 20 year plans, but human beings, it's hard to wrap our brain around a 20 year plan for our lives, even though we may have long-term goals. But think about where you want to be a year or 18 months from now. What's most important to you? Not what you're doing on a daily basis, because you're going to continue to care for your clients or your patients. You're going to continue to do those things. But what's going to move you to the next level? How are you going to get to that next goal? And keeping that in mind, even though it may be only you that's saying, I need to do this next thing. I want to start my own business. I want to start my consulting company. I want to write a book. I want to speak at a national conference, whatever that is, that you set as that important but not urgent, as the Stephen Covey literature says. Set that goal for yourself, figure out the steps to get there, and recognize the pitfalls, and then create some factors for accountability. What's going to keep you moving forward if nobody's saying, gee, Kelly, you need to expand your practice? You're saying that, but nobody's begging you to do that or helping you do that. You've got to figure out those steps, build in those factors, whether it's starting your own mastermind group where every Friday morning for an hour from 8 to 9 o'clock, you get on the phone with four of your colleagues and you brainstorm and you help each other. You find one accountability buddy. This is what saved my life when I started my first business. I was in my 40s when I left the corporate world. I was also happened to be getting divorced, buying a house. My dad passed away all in 1 year.
Oh,
and you talk about it. Yeah, it was a lot, and overwhelm was, you know, that was a daily, that was kind of my existence. And I found a friend who was a professional friend who was also starting a new business, and I didn't know there were such things that as accountability partners back then, but we got on the phone every morning together on our drive to work and said, okay, what's top of mind? What do you have to deal with? What are you scared of? What's overwhelming you? And just having somebody say, you can do it, or have you thought about this, or don't back down, don't send that person an email, get on the phone, solve that issue. It was like having a cheerleader and a truth sayer and somebody to keep you honest to your goals, who really knew where you wanted to go. And that I've done that now for, I've had my own business now for 17 years, and I've always had an accountability partner. It's changed about 3 times. Over the years, but it's been a lifesaver to me to have that person to hold me to task and say, are you living your vision? And that is so life-changing right there. And any of your listeners can do that right now. They can just reach out to somebody and say, hey, would you be willing to do a 15-minute touch base call once a week? It's that simple. It's hard to get to change your habits and to try something new, but when I go speak at conferences, and I've spoken at a lot of healthcare, I have a real passion for the healthcare industry, just based on my own family experiences. But I'll unbeknownst to the people in the room, by the end, they end up with an accountability partner before they leave the session, and they've got a job to do. And it's really about what's that 1 year vision that you set for yourself, and what are you going to do this week to get there? And they can choose to continue or not, but it can really change your life when you find out people are far more generous than you expect them to be. And they give you your time and their resources and connections if you ask. And if you ask somebody and they don't have time for it because they're in the state just like you are, Kelly, of that overwhelm and that constant churn, if they say, no, I'm sorry, I can't help you right now, you're not going to crumble. And we all think, oh, I can't handle the rejection if I raise my hand and ask for something and I don't get it. But in fact, we can. We're adults. We're powerful. You go on to the next person. And there are those things. So it's really clarifying the vision, simplifying the pathway, and executing the plan. And that's my coaching mantra.
Okay.
And because I deal in all industries, it's the common denominator is people and performance.
People and performance. Okay, I have that mantra. And accountability. Accountability. Yeah. I'm taking notes here.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yes. Okay, now I've skimmed a little bit of your books, and I hear and read the word riskophobia. What do you mean by that?
Riskophobia is where we get so used to backing down from risks, it becomes a way of life. And when you think about it, I mean, we lose sight of the fact that we are mammals, we're animals, and we happen to be one of the more defenseless and, you know, sort of clunky species. We don't have a lot of physical defenses. So we've got this finely tuned negativity bias. So we see the world through this sort of frightened lens. We're looking for danger all the time, and that goes in your population. Your listeners will know this, having been trained, most of them clinically. Our amygdala, the primitive part of our brain, still has a very powerful hold. It's changed the least in terms of developing in our brain over the years. It's the survival system that keeps us alive. So we're wired for danger, which is also the flip side of we're wired for newness. Back to when, you know, you drop off your goals over time, because our brain is, we're always looking for something new. And you can translate this as, ooh, that's something new. Therefore, I'm not going down that path. That seems too scary. I don't want to take that risk. And we train ourselves. We allow ourselves off that hook because we feel like there's danger out there. So I'm just going to stay where it's safe. And there's an argument to be made for that. But for those of us who want to set the bar higher, who want to experience all the richness of life, we've got to get out there and take some risks. And we can also translate that, you know, the butterflies in the stomach, the, oh my gosh, this is really scary, but I think I need to go down that path, as inspiration, as fuel. And it really is turning that sense of fear that fear of risk taking into what feeds us. It gives us that fuel and that energy. And if you remember back to college days, when it was that last stretch on a big term paper or an exam, and it was that stress that kept us going. Sometimes it was caffeine, but it was also that sense of stress turned into positive stress.
Right. Right.
And so that can fuel us.
Well, that, and I was thinking, if you have your accountability buddy, that can help us get through the riskophobia, you know, if it's on your to-do list or your performance list.
Right. And my partner will say, and it's so much easier to help people solve their problems than it is to solve our own, right? Just like it's easier to forgive others' mistakes than to forgive ourselves. We'll beat ourselves up endlessly. But if you think, my accountability partner, if I hit a snag or a problem and I'll think, oh, gee, I'll just write an email and see if I can clear that up. And my partner will forever say, pick up the phone. You want to get this sorted out and you want to do it with, you know, some power and some strength. Don't do it the safe and easy way. Pick up the phone and solve it. So it's just those little things, as well as that. Kelly, are you sticking to the big vision? Are you letting the day-to-day tasks, you know, being caught, as one of my friends says, in the swirl? Are you so caught in the day-to-day that you've lost sight of the big picture? Because every now and then you got to pull yourself out and make time for what's really important. And it may not be something that you can do today. I mean, for me, it was when I decided I want to write a book. I had no, and I've always been a writer professionally for other people, but I thought, you know, I'd kind of like my own message out there. I bought a book off of Amazon on how to write a book proposal. If you can't find it on Amazon, it doesn't exist. So I found a book on how to write a book and how to write a proposal, and I wrote a calendar of chapters due. Nobody was waiting for me to do this, But I put myself on a schedule, and it took me a year to write my first book proposal, and I sold it in multiple offers in a month. But it, you know, that year of preparation and planning took a long time, and I could have quit at any point because, believe me, nobody was begging me for a book. But I did it, and now, you know, I'm on my fifth one now, so it's pretty exciting. But only because you set those goals and you set that bar for yourself and you form that plan of how am I going to stick to it? And I use every means at my disposal. My assistant is my accountability manager. She will bug me no end if I've said, oh, I'm going to deliver this newsletter or this written piece or this whatever. You know, it's kind of, you said you'd have that Wednesday and it's Thursday. Can I have it by Friday? So that's, use your calendar, use your devices, use your spouse, use people in your life to remind you of what's important. And we all have to figure out our means to hold ourselves accountable. But when you begin to do that and you begin to click off those boxes of, wow, I said I was going to do it and by gosh, I did it. And I set only one big goal a year. I feel like that's all I can do. And last year it was write this book and get it finished and get a publisher, and I did it. Now it's let's launch this book into the world, and that's, and also in my head, and now a draft on paper, it's my next book. So, but when the world is not waiting for you to do something, and in our busy jobs, there's always plenty to keep us busy, but there are other dreams, there are other goals and objectives that we have, and it's up to us to make those happen. And only our fear of risk-taking, or by extension, our fear of failure is going to stop us. And when you decide, well, for me, failure is, if I don't learn anything, it's, you know, I flopped. If it really flopped by, you know, everybody else's expressions, but I learned something, well, by gosh, that's, you know, job well done. That's success. And entrepreneurs, we got to be pretty tough because failure is just part of entrepreneurship. And anybody that doesn't recognize that is, you know, either living in naivete or they just haven't hit their first snag.
Yeah, that's so true. So true. Well, tell us about your book.
Oh, my book. I'm so excited about it. It's everything I've done as a coach for the last 18 years. I've really codified what's been the most important thing for people. And a part of that is the science of hope. And I talk about that, the hope theory that comes from a couple of really pioneers in that field who, and I learned everything I could about hope as well as my own sort of natural learning and case studies of my own clients. But how do you bring that into the culture, and how do you feed hope into your team? Whether you're a three-person company or, you know, you're part of an organization of 30,000 people, what are you doing to feed hope? How do you infuse that into your culture? Is it by deep listening? Is it by the actions you're taking? Is it by mentoring others? Is it by bringing a positive attitude to work every day? So it's about the culture. It's also the latest science on, I've always been a student of communication. That's always been my work. But what is the latest about how you communicate with others most effectively? How you lead a team? And it's really surprising. I've got a great story about an MIT study where they looked at team effectiveness. And it was really surprising to find out it's how you communicate as much as what you communicate that brings a successful team outcome. So I talk a lot about how you can mirror that study in your own organization. And then I've got a chapter on what I call hope and tools, because that to me, and the first chapter of the book explains where the sort of the inner mantra hope and tools came for me, but for women in the workplace, because, you know, the data bears it out. I do a lot with women in leadership, and I love speaking at women's conferences. So secretly, I hope someday we only have them because we want them and not because we need them. But until then, both our instinct, our experience, and the data bears out that we don't have a level playing field. So anybody that's thinking, oh, gee, I thought that was just in my mind, the biases and those sort of little microaggressions and that I feel, I thought it was in my head, but no, it's not. The 20 years now of data from Catalyst and from McKinsey and now from the Lean In organization says what you're experiencing is real. So how do we get past that? So I've got a lot of tools and some workarounds for women who can help themselves and other women in the workplace. And then just dealing with the the constant churn of our daily existence. How do we get a grip on that? How do we deal with the multi-generational workplace, which is not going away? And by 2020, I'm a boomer, Kelly. You sound like you're younger than I am.
Oh, but, thank you so very much.
You're welcome. But by 2020, it'll be 60% millennials running the workplace. And now many millennials already manage other millennials. So we've got to learn to deal with that. None of these things are going away. In fact, the rapidity of change and just the pervasiveness is going to continue at a rapid pace. So my book is meant to help people get their arms around all of that, despite all these changes, stay really hopeful that they can stay true to their own vision and true to the vision of the organization that they serve. And it really is about becoming a servant leader, that knowing that you are there to serve a population. And one thing I tell my corporate leaders all the time is, you work for your team. They don't work for you. It's the other way around. So if you think they're there to serve you, you've got it backwards. So what are you doing to make their lives and their jobs easier? And for me in the workplace, it was a real personal mission. What mattered to me was getting my assistant, who had a very aggressive form of cancer, and we didn't know if we were going to lose her, getting her through that challenge and back to work, which is truly my proudest moment in the corporate world. People think it's some big accomplishment or something I did for a client, but it was getting my team to rally around this woman. And she, I've known her now for 30 years. She let me tell her story for the first time in my book. And she was my role model for risk-taking and fearlessness. So it's That's about so making kind. Your work life personal.
That's so kind.
It was so important, and she was so worth it. And my team, this little chatty group of PR professionals who were usually the first ones to spread the word, just circled the wagons. And no one but my boss and the HR folks knew how ill she was. And she came back to work a year later, and I was so happy that we'd had been able to protect her job. And that was one of the kindnesses of the corporate world that a lot of people don't see. They think it's all ruthlessness and, you know, suits, and it's not true. And you've got to find those people that spread hope, and you've got to be one. And if I have a message in the universe, it's that. It's feed hope, and people will follow you.
Well, how do we follow you? Because that is so true. I mean, that is so true. And I want our audience to be able to follow you, because we all need hope. We all need to give hope, and we all need to feed hope. Our conversation couldn't have come at a better time for me personally, and I'm certain a large group in our audience, it probably feels very personal. So let's let them know how to stay in touch and follow you.
I would encourage everybody, just go to my website, libbygill.com, and you can download a chapter of my book, and it really sets out that thesis for hope theory, and also why it was so critical in changing my life. I mean, there's a story. I grew up in a household of alcoholism and mental illness and suicide, and I was deeply affected by that. But this book really lays out, how do you deal with your own issues and some of the bigger issues that plague our workplace and our planet. So if they download that chapter, they'll be on my newsletter. They can opt out, of course, anytime, but they'll get information about the book. And I would love to be able to get their help and support in promoting it. And they'll be able to do that, because I'll send an email to them in ways that they can become involved in this sort of fueling hope into the universe movement.
Let's do it. LibbyGill.com.
Thank you.
This was such a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly, for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Okay, audience, we have a job to do. Feed hope into the world and not lose hope. Okay, audience, don't forget, next week, tune in to the Legal Nurse Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this interview. It is my pleasure to share it with you. Be sure to get a copy of How to Grow Your LNC Business, Secrets of Success. You'll read my practical advice, having been in your seat running a successful legal nurse consulting business. Go to http://lnc.tips/creating-series. And be sure to write a review for us on iTunes, telling the world how you appreciate Legal Nurse Podcast.
And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on LegalNurseBusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month Clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, thelncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.